This program is brought to you by Resonance FM. If you like what you hear, please support our work by making a donation at resonancefm.com/donate.
Bob Parks is in the shop. William is now recording a radio show, actually. I should say we're in a bookshop, and customers are browsing.
No, I can't go on the railway, but the railway.
No, we are recording. This is we've started, whether you like it or not. This is Dan Wilson. Dan Wilson's engineering. He's a sound artist. And he's done things for Resonance.
Fabulous. Okay, man. Let's go.
Today we're talking to Bob Parks on Wavelength on whatever it is. What's the date? 23rd, is it?
Something like that. It's
23rd.
24th, even.
24th.
Friday.
Yeah, Friday the 24th.
And I was just saying to Bob how sharp he's looking with his...
Very sharp.
Is this a new coat, Bob?
Well, actually, no, it's a 93-year-old man gave it to me, because I was saying how I wanted a three-quarter length, and he gave it to me.
Richard. Right. And this is Richard, who you might have... Richard's a regular customer to the shop. Oh. We're recording in the bookshop today.
Is this going out live on your...
No, it's not live. No.
No,
it's being
but
recorded.
It will go out.
Bob Parks, Richard.
Yeah, please meet you, Richard.
Parks is... you might have seen him perform somewhere. I
might have done.
Or heard about it.
Come and sit down, Bob. Come and sit over here, and then you can...
I'll take my hat off.
Yes.
And take my coat off, if I may.
Right. Does today's programme have a theme?
I've got ideas that I'm working on, actually. And it's a whole sort of... I've got my work back, basically, from James.
And you were in dispute, weren't you, about the painting?
I was, and he was holding my whole life's work, essentially, in ransom and in undisclosed locations. It's a gallery of everything. And anyhow, £1,240 for the solicitor's letter, and it appeared in my home. So I've just got three sketchbooks and a couple of other things I want.
Right.
But apart from that, I've got everything back. So it was the most difficult period of my life, actually.
Right.
And so I feel relieved, to have taken that stress off, because it's everything.
Yeah.
The other thing is...
I should just stress that we are in a bookshop, so there's a degree of activity going on around us.
Yes.
And we might have to just deal with customers or whatever.
Absolutely. Would you want some help with them?
Help you can try and deal with Richard, because he's quite a difficult customer.
All right.
And
he's out of earshot, I thought, but perhaps not.
He's pretending not to listen. But
$10, Richard.
He's quite capable of joining in on politics.
Here we go.
He's quite agitated on politics.
We've got quite a bit of political content. Here's another one. This, I'm sort of committed to black culture and rising the profile of it in a meaningful way, particularly musically, and through the church, actually. And so it's 10 years since the centennial, since my mum's death. And I don't know if you remember in the documentary, my mum... her funeral, the church, gospel church, came down from Tottenham. And it was quite an event in a sort of right-wing status quo village in the New Forest to have ecstatic religion. This is in sway.
Yeah,
I thought, 10 years later, I should, having created a precedent at the church, and I put it to the PCC and the vicar, because I've got contacts with the main black gospel singers and choruses in England today, Nicky Brown, and he works with the BBC, and Sister Carol ran the National Choir, and so on. Mm. And they're all on board. Mm. And so the only thing was that the PCC refused my request.
What's the PCC?
Church Council in Sway, the vicar, the local one.
Parish Church Council.
Parish Council. And it was, I suspect it's a case of institutional racism. Really? So before I confront the vicar with an accuser of institutional racism, I'm going to have a meeting with the church. I've got it at Luton, and there's a funeral that I'm going to. And
I'm going to show you something. This might spark your interest in within this area of
forbidden knowledge, a journey through the occult world. Oh,
a bit about zombies and voodoo.
Yeah, you see, I went to see Robin. He discovered Mike Nelson when he was external.
Gallery.
Yeah, external. He's at art school with me in the.
Who Mike Nelson was?
No, Robin was.
Robin, what's that?
Klasnick.
Klasnick.
Anyhow, Robin was external assessor at Chelsea School of Art when Mike Nelson graduated. So for 25 years, he was the first to exhibit him at MATS many years ago, and he's got had a substantial part of the show in his own storage because it had to be stored and transported back. So it was good to kind of hit the roots of it, so to speak. There's the current show at Robin's. They look like zombies, these characters that are being in the paintings. There's one with a sort of bit of slice out of the skull sort of thing, but with a... They've all got that sort of expression.
Like they've had their brains removed or something.
Right. They're all zombies, basically. Right. And so they're all like... So it's got a bit of an edge to it. That was that was quite a good show. Mm. Anyhow, so I'm going to put it to the gang to see whether they can come up with it. Before I go and confront the vicar in Sway, accuse her of institutional racism, I want to get back, I want to get my brothers and sisters unified. I mean, they're all 100% behind me. They'll say, absolutely.
Why do you think she's institutionally racist?
Well, there's a history since the, the Windrush in the 50s of Jamaican churches being shut out of Church of England. Historically, they haven't been allowed to worship. They've had to go wherever they can do it, you see. Yeah. And it's a repetition of that. She said, she doesn't trust me. And goodness knows why. And she doesn't trust me. And she won't give up control. She wants to whitewash this, actually, the experience. I do a Cliff Richard on it and sort of make it, nice, smiley, not ecstatic kind of, right, that sort of thing. Well, there was a Kirk Franklin show at the Royal Festival Hall. I think it was on duty before I got the sack. And they were screaming out The White Flight, and he wasn't as loud as this in South Africa when he was playing, that sort of thing. So there's always a predictable white... Anyhow, that's off the subject. Oh, Christ.
Yes.
The occult, zombies... that's... just see what they've got to say, and one way or another, I want to make this happen. You see, I know. They say, "Well, you put it on. Can you put it on a church hall?" I said, "No, I don't want to do that. I want to dignify. I want these people to be shown respect, and they should, they should be able to do a service in a church because it's appropriate. They don't have to shove them out into a village. It's what's happened." Historically, with black culture.
A different denomination, isn't there an issue there with, like, their kind of,
a different branch of Church of England. Well, I guess, yeah, obviously. But I wouldn't have thought, nowadays that Methodists, Presbyterians couldn't get together under the banner of Christianity. I mean, it's not, sort of Hinduism and Buddhism coming together. It's within the heading. It's not even Catholicism. It's a branch of Christianity. It's
but what's happening. Schisms, aren't there? I mean, they have these reasons why they can't sort of cohabit.
Yeah, that's why I want to talk with the gang about it, because historically they haven't made.
Who's the gang?
everyone from the it's the headquarters in Luton of the Church of God in Christ over here, and all the sort of main proponents really. I'll discuss the politics with them, and you know what basically what's going on.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's an experiment because, but I mean the point is. That's exactly what's happened to black culture. It's only the only way historically when the slaves came were from the 19th century through the church. That's the only way that leadership could gain power, Martin Luther King and all of that, Jesse Jackson. And, you know, they said, right, go out, do it somewhere in a hall. Yeah. And so it became a popular entertainment. But really, it's praise, it's spiritual, it's pure. But somehow, in a white interpretation of it, that's all I can... put it down to it can't see that and finds it some sort of a threat or so I just wanted to sort of demystify that. I want to get to the bottom of it because I've been engaged with black.
So but does your local vicar have reason not to trust you?
Well, I don't know. I've created a precedent at the church with my mum's funeral of the gospel choir coming down. Ah. So that should have stood for something. That
were
should
they
give
okay with that then?
Fine. It was a very successful and everyone was wonderful. You know, because we see it in the documentary. They're all over the moon about it.
Right.
I've got a couple of records I want to play to sneak into here. The Galloping Major.
Galloping Major. Is that.
Oh, oh, clear the road, here comes the Galloping Major.
Oh, yeah. Why on earth do you want to play that?
And I just, it comes through my childhood, and it's just a seminal piece. All the folk declare.
When I was in the army, I was a cavalryman, you know. And whenever I went on parade, a magnificent picture I made. Through my galloping here, my galloping there, this ridiculous habit I got. And I'm hanged if I don't think I'm galloping now, whether up in the saddle or not. And the people, they stare at me so, for it matters not where I may go. It's bumpety, 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 bump, as if I was riding my charger. Bumpety, 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 bump, as proud as an Indian Raja. All the girls declare that I'm a gay old stager. Hey, hey, clear the way, here comes the galloping major. Last year I thought I'd treat myself to a holiday by the sea. So I went and my quarters I fixed. Then I found that the bathing was mixed. So I galloped away to a bathing machine in the busiest part of the day. And I soon felt at home with the girls in the water and joined in their frivolous play. They were beautiful creatures, but Lord, how they giggled as soon as they saw me. Bumpety, 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 bump, as if I was riding my charger. Bumpety, 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 bump, as proud as an Indian Raja. All the girls declare that I'm a gay old stager. Hey, hey, clear the way, here comes the galloping major. I always was the ladies' man and a favorite with the six. Well, I called upon one yesterday, though I won't give the lady away. She started to talk of my army career and was quite interested, you see. But I got rather tired, so we talked about her, which was more interesting to me. And she said I'd been taking some wine, but as soon as we sat down to dine, I went bumpety, 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 bump, as if I was riding my charger. Bumpety, 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 bump, as proud as an Indian Raja. All the girls declare that I'm a gay old stager. Hey, hey, clear the way, here comes the galloping major. Bumpety, 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 bump. Get out of the way there, you fellows. Unless you want me to run you down, I guess this is the life. Now, hey, hey, clear the way, here comes the galloping major.
Right. I wonder if you know anything about this. This is quite...
Titanica's French Guiana. Is that a mosquito?
What is it, Dan?
That is a cicada.
Oh, cicada?
No, a grasshopper, even.
Oh, cicadas, they live underground for 7 years, don't they, or something, and then pop out for a couple of days and then die or something like that. And they make this, rubbing their hind legs together, they make this characteristic sound that is just like deafening sometimes.
But didn't you presented it to Milo thinking it was a particular kind of cicada and it turned out to be not that thing?
Yeah, I don't know if you've met Milo from Resonance. He's engineered William.
He was the engineer when you played the piano last time.
Was he? Okay.
Yeah, he's very interested in cicadas. He's interested in the cycle, life cycle of cicadas, and I bought him that. I found that in a dustbin, actually.
Where else?
And it turns out it's not a cicada, it's a grasshopper, so he rejected it. And you can have it if you like.
Can I?
Yeah.
I'll stick that up on the wall, yeah. I've got a scorpion, so that would go well with that, I think.
Are they natural predators, scorpions?
I don't know. Something's going on in Australia, so then, you know, they've got all those dropping insects that they hang over the toilets, basically. And so when you're. they drop on you and then you've got a venomous spot. Wow. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. One of my projects I'm working on is, I think I've told you this story already, so tell me if I don't want to prove myself. 64 in Southall, went to the Blue Moon Club, which is in Hayes, and it was a mod, Prince Buster. And I saw Sonny Boy Williams, a whole bunch of people like that. I was at school. And this group, Jimmy Powell and the Five Dimensions. Did I tell you that story?
You have mentioned him before, but that's okay.
Can I say it again? Anyhow, this came on. And his little guy sat on the piano and did an extended break. Yeah. And it was the beginning of Psychedelia. And there was a skinny guy in the group, which was Rod Stewart. That was his first group, and the lead guitarist lives in the next village to me in the New Forest, you see. And he went to school with Rod Stewart, and he introduced him to rhythm and blues. And they played Jimmy Powell. And I saw them at the time that the two prima donnas, because they both had growly voices, Rod Stewart and Jimmy Powell, they only lasted about a year together. But that was when I caught it. And I want my period, because I was born in 47, is Psychedelia, and I want this No Name Now collective.
This is the latest group.
It's to go into Psychedelia. And I want Scott to come down to talk to Gary.
So Scott was in the Recreationals.
He was our big music man. He did all the interpretation of music. And got the LPs and told the guys what to play and the right notes and all that kind of stuff. Anyhow, so he's the music interpreter. So he's got to come down and talk to Gary to pick up his chords, because he's a very versatile guitarist, and then report back, and then out of that I can frame the psychedelic sound, all the music and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Okay. So do you have it in mind what the music will sound like? Any particular? Does it sound like anything?
Psychedelic music.
But which ones? I mean, is it sort of? It's not. Well, I don't. Butterfly or Frank Zappa or.
I don't know if there's well, what it, the focus is, it's what political is it, more than
Joe
it is.
And the Fish?
No, it's not. It could be sort of Woodstocky. No, it's more political. It is much. America was drugs. It was LSD. Yeah. But it was the beginning of the working class revolution in England. That's what I'm pursuing.
Right.
So that's the route. When the Beatles.
So you're looking for English psychedelia?
Not American. No, it's
American.
No, specific. No, it's interesting. I don't think that's been really explored. I don't
think who that could encapsulate.
I don't know
there
myself,
these,
actually.
There were these sort of groups like the Downliners sect, weren't there? People like that.
Might be.
Kind of.
It might be, but no, I think it was just a period of when everything changed. The men started growing their hair long, that you could do extended breaks in music, orchestral music came in. There were no more definitions of what music could be, so it was wide open. It became basically anything.
Right.
And Gary, who plays guitar, wouldn't see himself as specifically, although his group, they were on at the same time as the Rolling Stones and Graham Bond organisation. They played the What's It Wheel in Manchester. And
the Twisted Wheel.
Twisted Wheel. So all of those, he was familiar. He recorded his first instrumental with Joe Meek, with pre-Telstar instrumental. He had a group called the Oh, crikey, what are they called? Anyhow, they did the Night of the Vampire or something,
right.
And that was their first. So, thing. But so he's very. I've got his biography actually. It's very interesting, you know, all the different. But he's the real thing, sort of thing. So I want to get it from the horse's mouth. So in a sense, I don't know what it's going to sound like, but I think it'll be tuneful and sort of orchestrally kind of stuff. Okay. But it's not noise. It's something, you know. It's a, you know. Yeah. If I'm going to San Francisco, wear a flower in your hair. That's the sort of beginning of it. That was a sort of change of direction. And then, I don't know how... that's what I want to know. That's what I want to kind of unearth, to see, to discover the sound, just to... I don't know, it's setting light to something, setting light to some...
perhaps we can get you to play in Leicester.
I would I'd love to play in Leicester. So Leicester would, when I was at art school there, nothing could be more appropriate than where would it be?
We don't know yet. It's just an idea. But you see,
I think
there's a record shop in Leicester called Out of Joint.
Yeah,
which is run by a collective. And I'm thinking, and then there's these Ultima Thule people who also run a record.
Because I think
there could be like three different outfits.
I think there's something about Leicester and music.
Right.
Certainly in the 60s was a kind of a melting pot.
Yeah.
And I think absolutely, I think it's a significant, as a Midlands town, as the richest town in Europe in the late 19th century, I think the textile industry and all that kind of thing. So it's got a profile, and there's a certain, you know, there's a mood about, there's a Leicester feeling, isn't there, that's quite, which we both share in and sort of identify with, I think.
Does Robin Klasnick come from Leicester, or was he just at college there? I think he was at college, wasn't he?
No, I think he was just at college. No, I don't think he was. No, but he was at college there. Yeah. So that whole, what was happening with Harry Thubron and John Thompson were there, and Harry came down from Leeds, and John was his right-hand man. He'd been with Peggy Guggenheim. And then he went down and headed the art department at Goldsmith, and the whole Brat Pack under Craig Martin was his maiden person. But he was the driving force behind that. And they were here at Leicester from 66 to 69. Mm. And we had this factory space. They did quite innovatory stuff. It was that period at art schools when we were there, and Leicester as well. Mm. The whole thing came together. It was quite a unique. Mm. So I'm very much interested in going back to that period and sort of taking up, basically. And I've got this show coming at the Bookery Gallery, which is, do you know, it's in Lisson Grove, that way. I just come from there, actually, but they didn't show up. But anyhow, what
is
it is, it's
like, as in books, like
B-O-O-K-E-R-Y, he's got a big book collection, and he's trying to link words in with visual, bring the two things together. And that was what I was doing in the last year at Leicester. I had a board, 8 foot by 4 foot, 12 pencils, 12 hours, and I just filled the whole thing with automatic writing, basically. Right. So I've been exploring, and then literally thousands of ogly, wuggly, biggly, boo, nishy, noshy, kooky, and all that. My mum had to type the whole lot out, and I think I threw them away. Yeah. I rewrote the whole of What If Stevens, 800 pages on Christmas in automatic writing. That didn't go down well in the MA course in Modern English and American Literature at Leicester University, particularly when I was sitting in the library with my books. I wanted to see different pages together, and tearing the pages out and sort of laying them was a sort of a sacrilegious act, I guess, in a library seat. But
sounds a bit like the John Latham story where, you know, about the chewed up book or the book that was sort of...
No.
Okay. Well, you know John Latham, the artist?
I do, and I know, because he's from Africa, isn't it? I know also Anne Bean, who's a sort of colleague, and I'm quite close with her now, actually. Right. So, and she's, big, equal to sort of thing. She was doing stuff at that
with
sort
Richard
of time.
Wilson and
Robin was Richard Wilson, wasn't
Paul
he?
Paul Burwell. He was the first member of the London Musicians Collective. I think those three did that. Memory's going.
Yeah.
I can't think of that thing they did where they hit barges with metal influence. Oh, okay. Someone, you know what I mean?
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Bring it all back, man. This is this is what that was again Leicester at that sort of time. Mm. Well, sound, that was, you know, with Ken Ford, my tutor, we were discovering in 68 that sound was the most basic of the senses. Right. So I think it was going in that way. So that, yeah, you know, there was quite a. And I mean, Jimi Hendrix played at the Students' Union in 68, yeah, and so there was a big sort of buzz, and at the university as well. And the Who, somebody threw a bottle at the Who,
oh, really?
And randomly they were hospitalised for 3 or 4 months, I think. It was quite a historic thing. Right. Yeah, so that was I don't really particularly like that sort of. But yeah, so that's this show that I'm trying to. Yeah, I've been a year and a half negotiating, but finally now I'm split with James. Yeah. And
you're like Arthur Brown.
Well, fire, not. No. Yeah, could be. I mean, but yeah, I think he did set his hair on fire.
He had a helmet, actually. He said he had a helmet. That
yeah, no, I think it set through and sort of. I think it actually did catch light once.
The story that Arthur Brown's medical helmet actually burned his scalp.
That was the story. Yeah,
We just had some inspectors in the shop there. Do you see they're making notes and looking at the ceiling?
Really? Well, those two?
Yeah. Did you not see?
No, I don't think so. Oh, well, they might have been. They might have been sort of like estate agents.
They were listening to what Bob was saying as well.
Oh, right.
Making notes in a little notebook.
They've probably got their eye on the property or something. Probably want to turn it into a cafe.
Or maybe they're CIA noting Bob's activities.
Right.
What's this? Letters to a friend, Svetlana. Oh, Joe's daughter.
Yes, Joe. Uncle Joe.
Uncle Joe. Look, I've got this wonderful...
You've handed Bob the Stalin's Daughter book.
Yeah, Svetlana.
Letters to a 20 letters to a friend.
So this is her biography, autobiography, Svetlana?
Yeah.
Good grief. Fabulous. So I think... I'm still as militant Stalinist as ever. I'm not.
I'm an occult Stalinist.
Occult Stalinist, yeah.
Romantic. And romantic.
Romantic. It was. That's what G.S. Fraser described me as. And you know, when I was up in Leicester, my mum and dad were staying bed and breakfast. They happened to be a Hungarian family, and I told them, you know, because I was quite outspoken at that time, how I supported the Russian invasion of Hungary, which didn't go down well with poor old mum and dad. They got a distinctively frosty reception. So I'm consistent in my support for Russia, you see.
Right. But what about Ukraine, though?
Yeah, exactly the same. I support Russia with that. It's part, the two, Ukraine and Russia, are different cultures, but together they created what was called Holy Russia. I'm a Russophile. That whole area, Poland, Ukraine, there's something about that area that's particularly valuable, I think. It produced the...
But don't you think if Russia had just been generous to the Ukraine instead of invading it, wouldn't that have been a better ploy? Wouldn't there have been a better way to get them on board? If Russia could have coerced Ukraine into a new Soviet state or whatever you want to call it, by generosity rather than by
yeah. Well, I tend to think it's all invented. I think Ukraine has suddenly become Ukraine because of what's happened. I don't think it was what it was before. I think this is a pretty much an invention, pressurised from the West, pressurised from American investments in the area and the identity and wanting to shore up.
Well, you're denying the existence of Ukraine.
How come they've got a separate language then?
Well,
do join in, Richard.
Yeah, well, no, I'm not.
How come they've got a separate language?
We have a customer in the shop who's interjecting.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I've got a little story. I was in the health food shop in New Milton.
This is the answer, Richard.
I was in a
health food shop in where?
In New Milton.
In New Milton.
Yeah, and I was saying how I supported the Russian invasion, you know, of the Ukraine, and the woman there said the woman behind you was Ukrainian.
Yes.
And I thought, oh my God, did I, you know, offend her? No, she said he's exactly right. So there is a groundswell in Ukraine. It's the perception. I think the whole concept of nationalism is dead.
Yeah, but this is a bit like you supporting Pol Pot. isn't it?
It's
one thing to be in favour of the idea, but surely the methods you've got to.
No, I'm a pacifist. I don't support violence in any respect. But both sides are equally using violence to solve the problem. No, the peace talk. Let's negotiate peace. Let's not. I'm just totally anti-war. That's all I am, and that anything. You know, just anything that can avert it.
How would you resolve the situation in Ukraine?
I don't think it's irresolvable, actually. Russia, historically, for the last 300 years, has been supporting its borders, you know, violently, you know, historically, against Finland, against, you know, all the countries, basically. So that's nothing new. And it goes back to Tsarist Russia, it's not new. But it's just paranoid about...
Richard, would you like to join the debate?
No, I asked my question, which hasn't been answered.
About the language. Richard was asking the question about how come they've got a separate language.
Well, a separate culture.
Right. It's a separate culture, Richard.
OK. But you were saying that it's a recent invention of... all I'm saying is that it's not a recent invention if they have a language stretching back centuries.
Right.
Didn't anybody see?
He's saying it can't be a recent invention if they have a separate culture and language.
No, I think that the idea of nationalism has died about 50 years ago. So if you bring... I mean, you can bring it up in a phony way, but I don't think when people use that as an it is, that's absolutely not what it is. There's no such thing as nationalism anymore, ever since...
Oh.
No, I mean, it's died a death, surely. Does anybody believe in nationalism? Does anyone believe in their country? Surely that's gone with, I don't know, almost with the Second World War. The whole concept of there being any credence to, I mean, it happened, you know, 19th with Elgar and, you know, the nationalist poets and that sort of thing, or the musicians, composers. But now to pretend that there's such a thing, I think it's absurd. I think it's, you know, I'm a strong CND person. That's what I've got behind it all. I'm absolutely violently anti-war, period. Any kind of war, nationalistic unit, but, you know, and I think you have to rethink things in order, and I don't think anyone's addressing that. All we're getting is constant propaganda about, you know, of a pro-Western, pro-UN, no, it's not UN, it's what,
so
whatever
Richard,
it is.
Does that answer your question, Richard?
No.
No.
No. Why can't he join in?
He's reticent.
Why can't... Well, this is an example of it. Okay, I think you could extend it to that point because it was what happening at the gallery when I'm at with the regime that's in. That, you know, I've got this. I'm a resident artist in this small gallery in the New Forest, and it's it's called Spudworks. They're rejigging it and making it a self-funding organisation through, you know, getting rent from everybody and certain business concerns and sort of making it a self-supporting thing. And it's sort of working in a way, and sort of the creative people are a bit of a thorn in the side of it, but, you know, it put up with that. Postmodernism was defined in the it was an Italian idea. One definition was that it's identifying commonality and celebrating difference. But I think the construct here is identifying commonality, which you could say roughly would fit into a definition of what nationalism is, and then celebrating difference, i.e. the cultures that aren't necessarily indigenous, but adding, like what's happening with the Caribbean community in England, that's adding to the wealth and the beauty of the thing. Celebrating difference. And then you have to add, as long as it's the difference we want you to incorporate. So it's it's like America, you've got freedom, as long as it's the sort of freedom we're offering you. But if it's not... I just had a rehash... someone had heard it. Actually, Valterini, so I was there last night. It was Sophie, who's the daughter of Molly Parking, who was big in the Colony Club when it was on. And it was, she's leaving the Valterinis. It was Slim Galliard was over in the 80s, I think, who cement mixer was his
cement
big
mixer.
The thing was that this is the end of Outrage, and all the people that were there, there wasn't a single person who wasn't interesting. And I was talking about the Viennese actionists, and people knew Otto Mill, Schwarzkopfler, and Schnittke, and Nitsch, and Günter Brus, and they knew them. And then I talked about Robert, John Duncan, how, can I say this? It's about he bought a dead woman.
Not the Riverside. Oh.
I don't know where it's going.
Do you know the area?
Well, that was his performance. But I won't get it. Anyhow, it was controversial. And that was my mate. Anyhow, he thought I was wilder than he was, in what I was doing. He was.
Right.
But anyhow, but.
How could you buy a dead woman?
TJ, it's the Mexican border.
Oh, I see. It's Mexico.
Mexico.
Oh, right.
So, yeah.
I don't think you can do it here.
No, not over here. No, it's over TJ. And anyhow, they knew about that. Oh, I said I was in the group with John. It was, and he, he's talking in authoritative voice. So I was incredibly impressed because here are people. This, I was talking about performance art because we were encouraged to do it as hosts at the South Bank and in these areas, and that's exactly what I got the shack for having, talked about actually what was being practiced in performance art, which is supposed to be what it stands for. So there's some sort of irony going on there. Similarly, back to what I was talking about, this guy bought this, again, I was talking with someone who remembered that this was happening at that edge of it, he bought a block in the outskirts of Moscow and set up a Stalinist commune there for 6 years. Nobody could leave it, sort of thing. And
it was
about 10 years ago.
Oh.
And he did 13 feature-length films in this time. And it was on it. The installation was at the Pompidou Centre. It was in Paris, so I went to Paris to do it. They were playing all the films. I was only able to stay for one. It was coming to England, but it never made it, you see. But the point was, this is a strict Stalinist regime, and the movies that were made are so outrageous, so uncensored, they're so wild, they just wouldn't be entertained. So there is... I mean, it's accused of being very restrictive, but actually, in practice, it's the exact opposite. The aesthetics of it are facilitative. It's ironic. It's almost... which is why I think I could have survived with the Khmer Rouge if I was in Cameroon, because I wanted to live there.
It's a bit of a gamble, isn't it?
It's an enormous gamble, because it could easily have gone the other way with the old nail in the back of the head,
might have decided you were an intellectual.
Yeah, I mean, but I think this is the unexplored side. If that is where all this is coming from, in a way, and what lays behind this motivation for, let's say, communism or whatever you want to call it, or whatever it's become now under Putin or whatever, it's the same sort of dogmatic thinking, the idea of working class people, ideally having the reins of power rather than the aristocratic. Power structure being transferred that way. So if that in any sense is there in any form, it's potentially explosive. And that's why all these things tied together, that's why I'm interested in psychedelia and all these things, because they're all to do touching on this thing of periods of history when sort of working class people have come close to gaining some sort of leverage, but I don't think it's ever really emerged what that looks like. So I don't think what happened in the 60s, I don't think it ever really was consummated. I don't think we really heard what it's all about, basically. And I think, it yet needs to be played out, which is what I'm interested in. And so when I'm talking the way that I'm talking, about I'm a Stalinist, that sort of thing, well, I'm a pacifist, but I do believe in ideas, and there's an integrity of thinking. I don't know, it's just trying to free up whole areas that haven't been sort of talked about or discussed, or haven't been made available. There's something, I don't know, the message. Well, you know, I've been going to painting, you know, art for all my life. There's a message that the visual message that's passed down through paintings through visually, and it's difficult to put these things into words, but it's certainly informing my side. There was something in this show at Robert Klasnick's.
We acquired this collection of avant-garde publications.
Right.
Which you might...
I think so. I think what was happening in 1917 in Russia, they were very much touching on this area, but the point was that it was actual. So, you know, in teaching, you've got aims and objectives, and you have to, you know, make up something, and you have to do the objective. Then aims and objectives were real, because if you didn't do it, you died of starvation, literally. Mm-hmm. And it, so... Malevich kept his... He took over Chagall's art school in Vitebsk and kept it going right into the 30s, Stalinist Russia. But not without... He didn't have to concede his ideas. So the point is that there's a whole... I think there's a lot of mileage in the aesthetics of it that's unexplored, which is what I'm... I'm not talking about going out and killing people. I'm not talking about supporting mass atrocities. No, the guy's a maniac, you know. I wouldn't, you know, support him in any way. But I support the ideas that underpin the...
It's difficult to separate them, though, isn't it?
I can. I don't have a problem. Right. I've never had a problem with it. Well, people who middle class have a problem in separating it out. But I think if you're working class, you've got absolutely no problem.
Yeah, you're too middle class, really.
I think it's a middle class morality thing.
Yeah. Well, I'd probably get sort of destroyed by either side then.
Yeah.
Closing in on you.
But, you know, obviously, this only lasted a couple of years before Larionov and Goncharov and all that sort of thing. It was, you know, it's sort of just like how psychedelia didn't last for that long in England. I don't know.
So, in this programme, should this programme be aired?
Yeah.
Would you want to play the
Gay Highway?
Gay Highway.
Thank you very much. I'd appreciate it.
The glad day breaking on the road you're taking, and the world a land of song. That's the hour you cherish for your cares all perish as you gaily march along. The skies above you seem to kiss and love you, and the big winds wander by. In this world so weary, there's no life so cheery as a roaming life, say I. Any old coat and any old hat and any old stick will do, as long as the open roads in front and the skies above are blue. Any old friend can come along with me, and any true heart I say, I will sing my rhyme, I will live my time on the rollicking gay highway. Whate'er befall you and whate'er folks call you, you can laugh through tears and strife. Every hour you borrow, ne'er a thought of sorrow on the gay highway of life. So on you travel, though you can't unravel every riddle as you go. There's a good ham for you and a good sleep for you at the journey's end, you know. Any old coat and any old hat and any old stick will do, as long as the open roads in front and the skies above are blue. Any old friend can come along with me, and any true heart I say, I will sing my rhyme, I will live my time. gay highway. Till I've had my time, I will sing my rhyme on the rollicking gay highway.
Do you know what this is? Do you know who that is?
It looks like that dreadful disc jockey.
It is. It's a nearly gold medallion. And Tony Blackburn.
Yes.
And he presents every morning, Sounds of the 60s or Saturdays, once a week to England. He presents a nearly gold medallion. And he presented one. He was playing locally in Christchurch, and I went to the middle of the front row. And he said, the chap in the front, he's agreeing with everything I say. So I said, yeah, it's because I'm a 60s person. And he said, well, what can you tell me? So I said, well, I walked around Los Angeles in a jockstrap for a year. Wow, wonderful. So he said, I need you in my, you know, you ought to have attended a lot of my shows. And then in the second half, where is this guy? And he came and presented me with a nearly gold medallion, you see. So it was, you know, so I'm wearing so that with pride. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Well, but I think it's... I don't know. Malevich said that in that long essay, the world is objectlessness. You can't state an object. When you do, it ceases to exist. You can only suggest it. It's similarly with this argument defending the Russian case in the Ukraine. You can't state it because you can't justify violence. No, it's. I don't know. It just needs to be said because everyone's saying the other thing, and somebody needs to say something just to counterbalance it, or it goes.
Got to help find this.
It's
book.
Out of proportion.
Yeah. What's the book we're looking for?
What is the book?
Dada College of Collage and Tweets.
Yes, sorry, Bob.
You can't.
These are fantastic books.
Oh yeah, I'm glad they spurred on.
I don't know, did they? Is it? It's a bit of a crappy programme, or is it quite? Is it vaguely interesting? I don't know.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. It's a good. It's a good onslaught of ideas.
Is it still?
Yeah, very good.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I'm not too sure, but
just what William likes, really. That's his.
I think so. I'm not sure, but.
He's trying to derail you a bit with those objects. He's trying to chuck those at you to see if you can. It triggers any more.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm taking it in that way because I'm not. Here she is. What's she?
I'll just see if there's another.
19738. There you go. She, Svetlana herself. And this is one of the qualities that makes reading her book such a moving experience, is a steadfast and unwavering in her love for her father, while critical of his deeds. She loves her country, which used to be Holy Russia, and is now a land in an agony of unhappiness and spiritual starvation. Well, this is part of what was the Ukraine and Holy Russia. This is Holy Russia. There's something about the pull of that, which
is just Holy
it's
Russia.
Like it's the world's property. It's not. It's bigger than just Russian or Ukrainian. It's something that we've got to treasure and nurture beyond mere nationalism, which is, I think, nationalism. Honestly, is no longer valid. I can't. It doesn't pull weight when all these stupid people are fighting for that for their national. Russia's not doing it for nationalism, believe me. It's not that. It's just bullying the Russians. It's nothing to do with this idea of the country or anything like that.
Do you know about the missing letter that I think encapsulates Holy Russia? It's the Yat. It's an obsolete letter that was actually taken, expunged from the language around the time of the revolution in 1918.
Uh-huh.
And it's like a B shape with a cross on it. It's like a religious letter. It's got a crucifix.
It's like a Russian cross, which is a thing, and then a second one at an angle underneath it.
Yeah.
I know that.
It's
a very, very, very potent symbol.
Yeah, yeah, and that was used.
Which represents Holy Russia.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
That's the spiritual. See, Malevich was 100% in the spiritual. But Stalin was spiritual, actually, and he studied at theological school before he became...
Stalin was in favour of expunging this letter, though, this Yat, the letter that was considered a pre-revolutionary baggage...
So he wanted to get rid of it?
Yeah, which maybe...
Trash it, yeah.
Which seems at odds with... I have to check on the book. Just bear with me a moment.
Of course. What do you
think of Russian children's books?
What do I think of Russian children?
Children's books.
I don't know.
William's got
some. Let me see some.
Are these yours?
They are, actually.
May I have a look?
From your collection?
Yes, you can have a look too.
Richard is just examining them. And
Do you speak Russian, Bob?
That's not Russian.
I don't know. I think
that's Polish.
I don't speak any Russian.
Richard speaks Russian.
Do you?
No, but I can read. I've started trying to learn Russian. Difficult language to get hold of.
Yes.
Is it really?
For my brain. Historical document.
They are indeed. And in fact, they're a bargain price.
Yeah. 1924,
I think that's got
100 years.
It's scary to think, actually, because I was looking at a book in 2010 that was 1910. I think that was 100 years ago. Right. And now we're looking at 1924.
What do you make of it?
That's a Polish.
Yeah, I like
that. I really love the cover.
The cover's good. Yeah. Just show it to Bob.
That's all I can. That one, too.
Yeah. Pass this one back.
Richard, I was talking to Bob about the Russian letter, the Yat. Which was expunged.
What's the Yat? The B with the cross?
The Holy Cross with the one at the angle underneath it.
That became an I. I mean, it was an I sound. I found a really old Russian book and it said 1703 or something, and I can't understand a word of it. I must show it to a Russian because it's an old Russian and a script. And I think it's. And there's a picture of Solomon in it, so I suspect it's the first five of the Bible or something.
Is it completely gibberish, or is it like the English books that use a long S, which scupper non-English readers sometimes?
It's completely indecipherable as a non-Russian.
Yeah. So I'm thinking world government, I don't think of nationalism.
Thanks.
So when I'm talking about Stalin, I'm talking about in relation to making world government work, not in terms of Russia. And i.e. that's the thinking behind it, not the practice of Stalin. Of course I won't support...
Thank you, William.
There's another one there.
Oh, that's the People's Self-Government of New Zealand. I've translated that one.
Priced at £10. It's very reasonable.
Yeah, but it's not
particularly
attractive.
But
they're pictures. I mean, it's a fair enough price. It's just not very lovely, is it?
Oh, I don't know. I think it has a certain charm.
Absolutely.
It doesn't compare with the cover of the other one you've got.
No.
This one, what, for children?
Yeah.
No, it's better for children.
25 for... What...
Yeah.
See, I'm working on... I hate working for photographs. I'm working on a photorealist portrait. And she's giving me... You know, she thought £200, which I'm asking was too much to ask. So she's giving me...
Who's this?
Somebody, one of the hosts at the South Bank, has wanted me to do a portrait of her father from a photo. And I hate doing that. And anyhow, she...
Well, you've got this a commission. That's your bread and butter. You should be seizing...
I know, but I've spent more on materials than she's going to pay me. So I forget about the transportation. So it's an anti-commission in as much as I'll be losing money. But no, I'm happy with the principle. This is why I'm doing it, actually. But the... in working from photos, which I hate, it's not bad, in a weird sort of way. And then I was thinking about socialist realism, which was Malevich, of all people, was the one most responsible for socialist realism. And they're not photorealists. They're skillful anatomies, but presenting a nice idealised Hitler or fascist or communist kind of image of a, like this child. Or like this, the heroism of the worker. I kind of like that, but that's genuinely informed. I mean, it might be misdirected or something, but to me it isn't, because this is working class culture. This is the dignity of physical labour, which is an identity of most other things do reflect middle class values, which are the, you know, shareholders or whatever but this actually has the impudence to put something like this as a central in the education of children. So it's giving them a different sort of consciousness.
So you're kind of conflicted then with this commission then, because you'd like to implement this photorealism into the commission, or
no, it's just an awareness that I got through... I can't, because I'm working through these stupid photos. But, it's just an awareness that I got that it's... Goodbye. Good to talk to you. Hasta la vista.
See you next time.
OK, see you.
Means through their job, basically, they don't need extra money.
So who's this?
This idea of equality.
Oh, yeah.
It's
Bob listening to Bob. Sounds like me.
I know, it didn't sound like me. It sounds more like you than me. Because you were the engineer, weren't you? Okay.
I don't think I would have seen
this. Not at this time.
Who was this?
This was in the old studio.
So, I should say, that we're all doing the best that we can. William is now playing Bob. This is the wavelength key. In that sense, proceeding with the collective. Which is now creating kind of chaos of infinite regret. Of Bob listening to himself from 2013, 2015, 2016.
Is that long ago? 8 years ago. I agree.
Oh, yeah, but didn't quite describe the plot. Then, after that, he and his acolytes sort of proceed to decimate England, go through West London.
Oh, this is Adam. I'm back in touch with him. He's found another definition for no name now, bigger than God. So I've got to read that. He's got the whole text that he's unearthed that's mind-blowing. So all of these things I'm trying to push ahead on. If one of them connects, I'll have something to talk about, basically. If I can get this psychedelic group, if I get Scott to come up, I've got different projects in the fire. So I'll settle for one of them at the moment. I did a show at the gallery, which Spudworks, when I put my big crucifixion up for show for the first time. And I put it on 2x4, so it's too tall to fit in, so it was at an angle. And then the triptych on Mum's death, and then the ones about the actual car crash. I worked one on the... thank you, I don't want to bend them.
No.
One on the spirituality underpinning psychosis, and then walking art as being a development from performance art, and then the spirituality of place. But, I don't know.
Fair enough. Well, thank you very much. That was Bob Parks on Wavelength on Bob Parks on Wavelength. One more time. Thank you very much for coming in, Bob.
It's all right.
To the bookshop.
I don't know if that's any good. Is there something in there you might be able to use?
I have my lunch now, yeah.
Okay. I'll bring that back. Thank you for this. That'll be brilliant. I'll stick that on the wall.
I'll edit that a little bit.
Yes. Okay. Just stick some music in.
You know, who were the people in the original Yardbirds? I like... It's the face of the guy.
Jimmy Page and Eric Clapton.
Was the singer who died of...
Ralph's or something.
Yeah, I like his face.
Right.
His face is like the voice of what that was all about. It's more than the...
Chris Rolfs, I think he was called.
Yeah, Rolfs, that's the guy. It was his guy. And then the other one was the other one from Birmingham, which was there was the Yardbirds and the... what was the other group? And it had the guy, the keyboard...
Jeff Beck.
Cream?
No, it's not R&B, heavy sort of R&B. Like the, they were just like... They were the other Yardbirds, you know, they were the two ones that came out about the same time who were doing...
Spencer Davis
group, yeah. And who was the keyboard player in that?
Winwood,
Stevie Winwood. Right. Yeah, he's the guy that... I think it was the group that he formed after that.
Yes.
It's the one I'm looking... No, not Traffic. After Traffic, then. Maybe it's not Stevie Winwood. Maybe it's someone else. But what, a person like that who was in it. Oh, God.
Well, it was Steve Winwood.
So shall we take a picture? I think we've taken a picture of that for...
Spooky Tooth. Yeah, all right, play something by Spooky... That will pass as a as an English psychedelia.
Okay.
Right.
This program has been brought to you by Resonance FM. If you like what you heard, please support our work by making a donation at resonancefm.com/donate.